Looking for a new sports show?
So my wife and I go to the movies because you have to go opening weekend.
Yeah, I was with my boy, so he got us right up to the front of the line of this new club.
So I'm stuck watching my sister's dog again. He's throwing up all night.
2.5 games back in the standings, I feel like the Mets are one big bat away from competing. Imagine that. A sports show that's about sports. The Joe Fan Show. Are you fan enough?
Welcome to the Joe Fan Show with your host, Clayton Hamilton.
Greetings, sports fans. My name is Clayton Hamilton, and you're listening to the Joe Fan Show, coming to you live from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, the greatest city in the world, right here on the home of Vegas sports, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Let's check the headlines. The University of Kentucky has announced a 2-year extension to both basketball coach John Calipari and football coach Mark Stoops. Calipari's deal will run through 2024 and Stoops through 2022. The New York Rangers have announced that Henrik Lundqvist will return to the lineup this weekend, either Saturday versus the Kings or Sunday versus the Ducks. The 2012 Vezina Trophy winner has been sidelined since March 7th with a hip injury. And Duke freshman Jason Tatum has announced that he will enter this summer's NBA draft. The 6'8" small forward is projected to be a top 5 pick. He averaged 16.8 points and 7.3 rebounds this season for the Blue Devils. Today we have Mo Nerale and Jeff Klein. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Are you fan enough?
So let's get loud and let's get proud. We got a game.
Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, always feeling great. Welcome to the Joe Fan Show on NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Going to head out today and welcome in my good buddy out there where the stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas, Mo Nerale. Welcome, Mo.
Hey, Clayton. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Great to talk to you, buddy. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's back to basketball season, my favorite part of the year.
Yeah, back to basketball. Mo Nerale, of course, college basketball insider and aficionado, covers the NBA as well. You can follow him at RealMSN on Twitter. I imagine there is quite a bit for you going on right now, popping back and forth between the NBA and the tournament.
Yeah, it's a great time of year. Of course, March Madness everyone loves, but also in the NBA, teams getting ready for the playoffs, gearing up that final stretch. It's a great time to be a basketball fan.
Yeah, and a good time to be here in Las Vegas if you like to bet the basketball. And I got to ask you, Mo, which is the most annoying guy in the book? Is it clapping guy who claps and yells at the TV, or is it guy that doesn't understand how to bet on the board, or is it guy that thinks that the book has fixed every one of the games, or is it guy who repeats the same thing that he thinks is funny over and over again, trying to get somebody to laugh or talk to him?
Those are some pretty tough options. I'd go with a guy that doesn't understand. How do you not understand? It should be commonplace. We're Americans. We should know how to bet sports.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you, the lines get longer and longer and take longer and longer these days. So please, if you're going out to bet this upcoming weekend, just learn how to do it. Write the numbers down on a sheet of paper. Don't hassle the poor writers at the book any longer, trying to get them to find Michigan on the board for you. Just know the number. Let's dive in to some NBA. We'll start with that, Mo. All of the talk has been this week about players resting. We saw LeBron James, he sit out because Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love were hurt. So they decided just to sit LeBron, not use him them against the Clippers, the Saturday night game, 2 weeks in a row now that the NBA has been missing players. Adam Silver came out yesterday and he said he's going to send a memo out to everybody and say there will be harsh consequences if this continues. One, what does that mean? And two, how effective is it, or what is the meaning, and is it a really good idea for Adam Silver to get involved publicly?
So the main thing was, is he, for the people that don't just read the headlines, he actually just said there will only be penalties for not giving proper notice. So I think he was upset that the Cavs let the national audience know like 30 minutes ahead of time that all three of the big three were sitting out. As far as long-term, he said he's going to bring it up at the Board of Governors this summer, and he wants them to look at it very closely. We'll see what comes of that. I don't know, and he also had one comment where he said he wants owners to get involved in discussions about resting players or not resting players. I know Adam Silver is a Knicks fan. He should know that owners getting involved in the games have never been a good idea. That's why they haven't won a championship in my lifetime. So that makes sense for him to get
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of sort of bravado, or he felt like he had to say something even though he didn't know what to say. And it sort of reminded me of that guy that says, well, you better do this or else. And the guy's like, or else what? Or else there's going to be consequences. Like, what consequences? Well, I'm going to give you consequences. We'll go ahead and do it then. And it just seemed hollow.
Yeah, exactly. It seemed like it was like a PR move more than anything else. Nothing behind it. No meat on the bone there. It's just the bone is all he gave you. He threw you a bone. And it seems like a lot of people fell for it, so I guess it worked.
Yeah, I would like to get your take on this, because at least for me, when guys sit out, I don't care. It doesn't bother me. I don't get upset about it. It's not the end of the world. On a day like Saturday, where the Clippers and the Cavs was probably one of the better matchups, it's really easy for me to turn my attention to a game like Portland and Atlanta or Houston and Denver. So why is this such a big to do?
No, I'm with you. There's so many games going on, and it was the Saturday of March Madness anyway. So I don't think many people were watching the NBA that night anyway. I'm a huge NBA fan, but I was watching college basketball that night, whether LeBron's playing or not playing. And as you know, I'm a huge LeBron fan. It's not that big of a deal. You go on Twitter, Facebook, what do people care about? They care about rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's either you rest and get ready to win championships, or you sit out some little game that isn't going to have much of an effect on whether you have home court or not. It's not that big of a deal. I'm not sure why people get so worked up about it. Like LeBron said yesterday, Pop's been doing this for 10 years. It seemed like no one had a problem with it until he started sitting out.
Right, and they have healthy scratches in hockey. Baseball guys sit out all the time. You know, there were only 66 players in Major League Baseball last year that played 150 games or more, and that's the equivalent of sitting out 10 NBA games would be playing 150. So I just, like I said, I don't get it. It happens all the time in other sports. There's so many games that I don't know why it matters. I think it matters like when we were kids and we used to have one NBA game a week available to us on TV on a Saturday. But now, like I said, there's 8, 9, 10 games on tonight, and I can have my choice of any of them.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a basketball fan, you can watch any basketball game and enjoy it. You shouldn't need one specific matchup to get your basketball fix for the day. Like you said, you can go, you have your pick of whatever game you want. So many stars, so many young stars. I mean, we were talking about the other day how much we like watching the Denver Nuggets. If you can't appreciate watching the Denver Nuggets, you're not a real basketball fan either way.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. Nuggets, fun team. Hopefully they will sneak into the playoffs. One of those marquee matchups that we are going to get most likely this weekend, I have a feeling both of these fellows are going to play, is Oklahoma City and the Houston Rockets. Lots of talk been going around about MVP. Is it Harden? Is it Russell Westbrook? Where do you stand on it? Do you think that each one of these guys, which one of them has sort of the most value to you? Like, forget about the award, but which guy does the team go into the tank without?
For me, it's James Harden. He's definitely the more valuable player. Going back to what we started the show with, right, odds, if you go look at what Vegas had the Thunder at the beginning of the year, they're over under versus what they had the Rockets at. I think the Rockets were at 41. The Thunder were at 45, if I remember right. And the Rockets are going to kill their 41, and it seems like the Thunder will be right at that 46. And that just goes to show no one thought the Rockets were going to do anything this year, and they've been one of the four best teams in the league. No one saw that coming. He has a bunch of role players around him. He's making them better. Using D'Antoni's offense, obviously, is helping a lot, spreading the floor. But I think if you take James Harden off that off the Rockets team, they're maybe a 25-win team. You take Westbrook off, maybe they're also a 25-win team, but the Rockets have more wins with Harden than the Thunder have with Westbrook.
Right. I'm sort of with you on that, in that we've seen what the Thunder are with Westbrook, and they're sitting down in the, you know, 6-7 slot. But I'm with you, without James Harden, I think this Rocket team does have issues. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, along with Amona Rally down in Texas. Follow Mo at RealMSN on Twitter. When you get into the playoffs, and we have seen with Oklahoma City their inability to even be competitive with Golden State, they've been blown out of the gym on four occasions. Houston has been able to play with and beat Golden State. They have sort of the opportunity, I feel, to maybe get hot and at least press Golden State and press San Antonio. Is there any way that Oklahoma City can find some kind of magic to be relevant in the playoffs?
Maybe they can get a couple of games against. If you look at their matchup, it's going to be either Houston or San Antonio in the first round. If I was Golden State, I'd probably tank for the 2 seed just so I could play the Thunder in the first round if the Thunder had the 7 seed. But just looking at the potential matchups right now, maybe Westbrook can get you a game or two. And then last year, also, what helped the Thunder out a lot was their rebounding. Steven Adams, Enes Kanter, maybe they can get you a couple games, but I don't see them beating either the Rockets or the Spurs in a 7-game series. And like you said, have no chance against the Warriors.
They tried to replace Kevin Durant this year with Victor Oladipo. They brought in Dougie Buckets from Chicago. They do have one of the teams that really has three or four guys that are sort of more traditional big men down low. They do have Adams, Kanter, Taj Gibson, a nice pickup. Sabonis is a big body, a little bit more of a Euro big. What do the Thunder need to do moving forward to go out and be competitive? There was a lot of talk earlier in the year about maybe trying to make a move for somebody like Paul George III. Is that possible?
I don't know if it's possible. I don't know if anyone wants Oladipo. So he signed an extension this summer. So did Steven Adams. So what that does, along with Westbrook, all three of them have huge cap numbers for next year. So if you're going to go get a big guy, you got to trade one of them. It's like, does anyone really want Oladipo's contract? Probably not. So that leaves you with a mid-level exception. I think the biggest need this team has is they need a shooter we go get. Maybe a Kyle Korver, Danilo Gallinari can become a free agent. He has a player option for $16 million, so I don't think he turned that down to go take $8 million from the Thunder at the mid-level exception. It may just have to be internal. Sabonis is a nice young big. I like him. I think he'll improve. If you look at their roster, someone like Serge Ibaka, who they just traded, would have been a nice piece, a nice stretch for spread the floor for Westbrook so he has space, kind of like what Ryan Anderson does for James Harden on the Rockets. Mm-hmm. It just seems like what I compare their roster to right now is that late 2000s or mid-2000s Cavs team that had Larry Hughes, who was kind of like LeBron. That's Oladipo. You have Steven Adams, who all the fans love. That's Ilgauskas. And then you have Enes Kanter, who's a traditional big man in an era of stretch fours. And then the Cavs had Donnell Marshall, a stretch four, which back then was an era of traditional big men. It just seems like it's not going to work. And they're so cap-strapped, they can't really do much to go get anyone.
Right. And what's odd about that team, too, is that it seems like they want to be a little bit more of a run-and-gun team than they are. And you see them, they do go down low to Adams on occasion, but it seems like a lot of his buckets are rebounds and second chance pickups, but they just don't have that sort of flair that Houston does. And when you've got Ryan Anderson on the Rockets and he's listed as a power forward, like that's who's playing your four, that's just such a different dynamic, because all he's going to do is step behind the line and shoot a three. He's like, it's like a four guard offense in Houston, and I just don't see how they can replicate that in Oklahoma City.
Exactly. It's like they're stuck in the wrong era. Mm-hmm. Maybe that roster would have worked 10 years ago, but that's just not how the NBA works, especially when your star, like Harden is, like Westbrook is a ball-centric guy that's going to need to have the ball for most of the shot clock. I can penetrate and create opportunities, but if you're picking it out to guys like Oladipo and Roberson that can't shoot, that penetration is not paying off. Whereas Harden, like you said, you have Eric Gordon to kick out to, you have Ryan Anderson, you got Lou Williams now, even Patrick Beverley, he's a better shooter than Oladipo is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not a good fit.
And not to mention how much of a better shooter Harden is than Westbrook. And a stat that I thought was really interesting was that Harden could miss his next 177 shots, and his effective field goal percentage would still be higher than Russell Westbrook. So that's crazy. Like Westbrook, like you think about how much he is of a volume shooter in the sort of Kobe capacity. He was a volume shooter. Allen Iverson, a volume shooter, as opposed to a really effective one.
Yeah, exactly. To me, it's crazy that people are talking about Westbrook as an MVP. Him and Ricky Rubio have the same effective field goal percentage so far this year. Right. I don't think anyone equates Ricky Rubio to a good scorer.
No, and everyone, you know, you always sort of get nervous when Ricky Rubio makes a few shots at the beginning of the game. It's like when Ron Artest, worst thing that could happen is when Ron Artest would make a couple of threes early, because you know that he would chuck it the rest of the game. And that's kind of what you feel about Ricky Rubio. You almost want him to miss his first two or three, and so that he forgets about shooting the rest of the night.
Yeah, exactly. And you could kind of say the same thing about Westbrook. If he misses his first couple of threes, you know he'll probably jack up 10 that night. Maybe if he misses his first couple, he'll only take six and just drive to the hole the rest of the night. It's just, it doesn't work. If you can't shoot in today's NBA and you're a guard, you're not going to go very far in the playoffs. And I think Russell Westbrook's about to find that out for the next 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. He needs some help, but then he also needs to sort of figure out how he can be more effective. So I'm with you. Like as impressive as the triple doubles have been, I disagree with Oscar Robertson, who said that Russell Westbrook is his MVP today. But I'm sort of with you. It's really James Harden's to lose, and I'm curious as to see what he can do in the rest of the playoffs. Mo, it was great talking to you. I cannot wait to have you back. We're gonna run to break. Remember, follow Mona Rally on Twitter at RealMSN. All right. Oh, thanks, Mo. I guess Mo is gone. We're going to run to break now. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game. The Joe Fan Scoreboard is brought to you by Kazoom Adventures. For outdoor hikes that can win you money, visit radio.gokazoom.com for exclusive picture and video clues. Get outdoors, find flags, play Kazoom, the hottest new game in Vegas. radio.gokazoom.com. In college basketball tonight, NIT action gets underway at 4 with Illinois heading to Orlando to face UCF. That one's followed by Cal State Bakersfield at UT Arlington. In the CBI, Illinois-Chicago travels to Coastal Carolina at 4, followed by Utah Valley at Wyoming. And in the CIT, tipping at 5, Idaho is at Texas State. Things get underway tonight in the NBA at 4 as Kemba Walker and the Hornets are in Orlando to face Terrence Ross and the Magic. At 4:30, Paul George and the Pacers are in Boston to play Jay Crowder and the Celtics. Three games tipping off at 5 with the Hawks at the Wizards, the Pistons at the Bulls, and the 76ers at the Thunder. At 6 o'clock, LeBron James and the Cavs will face off with Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets in Denver. And in the late game with a 7:30 tip, the Knicks are at the Jazz and the Bucks are at the Kings. Three games in the NHL tonight, starting with at 4 o'clock with Toronto at the playoff-bound Columbus Blue Jackets. At 5, the battle for New York is at the Garden where the Rangers will host the Islanders. And at 7 from Anaheim, the Oilers face the Ducks. And that is a look at your Joe Fan scoreboard. Welcome back to the Joe Fan Show. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas. Time to talk a little bit of baseball, going out to my good friend Jeff Klein in Los Angeles. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, Clayton. How's it going?
It is going excellent. Did you survive all of the rain at Dodger Stadium last night?
Yeah. You know, it wasn't too bad. It was kind of a constant heavy drizzle that sort of picked up, and it went from anything from a little mist to a little bit heavier, more of a light rain. But it was constant, so you know, I think that affected the game a little bit, but not enough to cause any kind of delays. So definitely made for a pretty interesting pitching matchup.
Yeah, the old Dodger Stadium haven't had a rain out since the year 2000, but they did get a heavy misting last night in the World Baseball Classic semifinal. A Team USA 2-1 victors over Japan. They move on to play Puerto Rico this evening in the championship game. I was real curious, and I was thinking about you, Jeff, because I have loved the WBC ever since its inception, and I go back even before this was ever conceived and wanted to have Major League Baseball players in the Olympics for the longest time, and this is the closest that I will ever get to that. How have you seen the tournament grow since its inception?
Yeah, I think this year has been a pretty big year for the tournament. You know, we have some new teams that actually did pretty well. Israel made a little bit of a run there, kind of surprised a lot of people. I think Netherlands really elevated their country this year. You know, so it's nice to see the tournament grow. You know, the thing that keeps me scratching my head is a lot of the pundits, people really ripping on the World Baseball Classic, saying it's not good. I mean, if you've watched this tournament, you know it's good. It's exciting. These guys are playing with passion. It's, you know, maybe the rules are set up as somewhat of an exhibition-style game, but no way that these players are playing it like an exhibition game.
Yeah, I sort of feel like a part of the problem with the tournament has simply been who's carrying it. And I feel like just because it's on Major League Baseball Network and it's on ESPN Deportes and only in Spanish, and just like tonight, they actually are going to put the championship game on ESPN2, but they're only going to give you Spanish language broadcasting, which means you have to have MLB Network in order to get the TV broadcast. Now, the folks here at Lotus are going to be kind enough to put the game on ESPN at 6 o'clock tonight. So if you are local to Las Vegas, want to catch the radio feed, ESPN 1100 at 6 o'clock. But do you think, Jeff, that their broadcast partners are part of the problem? If it was ESPN or if it was Fox, would this sort of be out in front more?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they'd be promoting the hell out of this, you know, they'd be promoting it, you know, back-to-back coverage, talking up player profiles, you know. So, yeah, I do think that they need to look at who airs it, when it airs, try to get at least these last few games, the semifinals and the finals, on network television. And I think that would really probably that's the single biggest factor that keeps this game and keeps the popularity down.
You know, I was watching last night, and one of the guys, I think it was Scott Van Pelt, was talking about how he wasn't paying attention to the World Baseball Classic, and it was just another thing, and everyone around the building was like, oh, are they still doing that? And it just was really odd, because it seems like every 4 years when this happens, everyone says, oh, it's this again, and yada, 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 and then it gets to the end of the tournament, and everybody's like, oh, man, I forgot how great this was. Like, why can't we remember that it's been like this each one of the tournaments? It's been fun. At the end, everyone says, hey, this was a great time, and then they're going to forget that it was a great time in 4 more years.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, hopefully more people have tuned in this time. I think a lot of people who are negative on the WBC haven't really been the ones who've tuned in. If they've sort of skipped on it, as, you know, written off, as I said, he's an exhibition game that players don't really care. Because let's be honest, here in the U.S., a lot of the players who've gone on record haven't been as enthusiastic about joining the Team USA than players from other countries. So I think that perception has really seeped into the national narrative on this game, or on this tournament, rather. But I think going forward, you know, we heard Mike Trout, for example, who said he really wants to play next time the tournament comes around. Obviously, we could have used him this year. Any team with Mike Trout is going to be a better team. But, you know, so hopefully that narrative will maybe shrink. It's never going to die out, but maybe they'll shrink and more people will tune in next time, and the popularity will continue.
Yeah, tonight on the Hill, Marcus Stroman, who, you know, I'm very much like you, Jeff, going back to the people like Mike Trout that passed, would love to have Clayton Kershaw or Madison Bumgarner or Chris Sale on the Hill tonight. Instead, we have Marcus Stroman, and I wanted to throw this out to you. Hats off and kudos to Marcus Stroman, because he had the opportunity to play for Puerto Rico or the opportunity to play for the U.S. Marcus Stroman was born in New York City. He said, I'm American. I was born here. I was raised here. I went to school here. I'm going to play for Team USA. Ruffled an incredible amount of feathers in Puerto Rico. The Puerto Rican fans have been harassing his family. They've been harassing his mom on Twitter, talking about how he's a turncoat. This is a kid that was born in New York City playing for his country, Team USA. And I just want to say hats off to you, because there's so many other guys who sort of turned tail and ran and played for other nations other than Team USA.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the players, I think they do feel a little bit stronger connection to some of the other countries, even if they were born in the United States, they feel, you know, through family ties and so forth. And some players have gone on record saying, it was a grandparent or a parent that really inspired them to play baseball, and they were playing on that respective team for that parent. And so I think that, you know, just being the melting pot that the United States is kind of a draw for a lot of players to go back to maybe their roots. So, yeah, it takes a lot of courage for Stroman to really stick to who he wanted to play for and not really be, pushed towards a different decision by other fans.
The Puerto Rican team going with Seth Lugo tonight. Seth Lugo in the Mets system going to be fighting out for that fifth starter spot with the Mets, maybe a long relief guy. What are you looking for in tonight's game? And give me a prediction.
If you remember the last time that these two teams faced, Puerto Rico beat the U.S. 6-5. You know, it's hard to know for one game. The line, it depends on the lineup, if who's going to show up. I feel like the U.S. has a little bit of an edge after seeing Lugo. He was probably less known, obviously, than Stroman, and so I think that's an advantage. They could take advantage of that, and the experienced veteran hitters hopefully come out on top.
Yeah, Team USA hasn't really announced their roster tonight. Everyone expects that Jonathan Lucroy is going to play tonight in place of Buster Posey. We could see Buster Posey at DH. We could also see Paul Goldschmidt at DH. We could see McCutchen in right and Stanton at DH. What combination would you put out there at catcher, DH, and right field?
I mean, I like getting Goldschmidt into the game no matter what. I mean, he's the type of hitter who can really change a game dramatically with one swing. Out of anyone who's sort of hasn't gotten as much playing time as they should, I really would like to see Goldschmidt get in there. I like Posey in big situations. Those are sort of who I'm passionate about.
Right field, McCutchen and Stanton. I guess my question is, would you put Stanton in right field and Posey or Goldschmidt to DH, or would you keep McCutchen in right field and have Stanton DH?
No, I'd want Goldschmidt to DH, and I'd put Stanton in right field.
Excellent. We saw a couple of guys real quick, Jeff, last night from Japan that could have a future in Major League Baseball. Mostly Yoshitomo Shigetsu. He had been over in Japan. He plays for the Yokohama Bay Stars. He's available to come over here, not this summer, but next. What did you think of him, and is there anybody else we could probably see?
Yeah, I really liked him this tournament. And last night, I think a lot of people were holding their breath when he hit that ball. It kind of died. I think probably the rain and the moisture maybe kind of killed that ball that he had hit sort of late in the game. It would have put Japan up ahead. But he's been really impressive. He's, out of anyone in that lineup, he's a beast. And so that's someone I think a lot of teams are really going to look at. And you know, for teams that who need that kind of an outfielder, I think really should go after him.
Yeah, he kept calling him sort of Japanese Jim Tomei, high leg kick, but a lot of power. We haven't seen too many of those type of guys come over. Hideki Matsui comes to mind. But another guy that looked impressive was the guy on the hill last night, Tomoyuki Sugano. He's still got now 2 years before he can come over. Interesting story with him, Jeff. He got drafted. He got drafted by a team, and his father and grandfather had played for the Yomiuri Giants. And so, when the Ham Fighters drafted him, he refused to play for them. Said he would sit out a year so that he could play for Tokyo. That's now put him another year behind on his service time. So here's a guy that could have come over next year, now has to wait 2 years. But do you think he has a future?
You know, the one thing that really impressed me about him, and it's hard to really know how a pitcher is going to be just seeing them one game or two games in a brief tournament. I remember the last tournament, Sam Deduno was really impressive, and he hasn't really had much of an MLB career. But the thing I really liked about him was his poise on the mound, and he did not seem intimidated by this, you know, obviously very intimidating American lineup. I think he went up there with a really good game plan. He knew what he was doing. And that's someone that I think has a good baseball IQ and smart pitcher. And that's the type of pitcher I think can survive if they're coming over from a league, from a, like the Japanese league, for example.
Yeah, it looked an awful lot like Masahiro Tanaka of the Yankees, not just just facially and in appearance, but looked an awful lot like him in terms of what his delivery was and the type of pitches that he threw. And on some level, Jeff, and I'll get you to comment on this before we go to break here real quick, he sort of reminded me of the way that he pitches in his style of a right-handed Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who could really his pitches could work against a batter and work to that batter's weakness. He wasn't really overpowering anyone, but he definitely was in control. And that's the type of pitcher that I like and I think could really succeed in baseball. And I think one of the problems we see with Japanese pitchers is they come over and they last for a couple of years and then they aren't really able to adjust or they aren't really able to – their stuff doesn't overpower hitters as much. So I like a guy like Sugano who's smart on the mound, knows how to take advantage of holes in batter swings, and isn't afraid of those hitters.
Yeah, certainly his makeup, like I said, he wasn't intimidated at all. So we'll see if we see him in a couple of years. Jeff Klein's going to stick with me when we come back, talk a little Atlanta Braves. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game. The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward a feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas. Jeff Klein talking baseball out in Los Angeles, California. Jeff, before we continue on, I need a prediction with score for this evening's game. WBC final, Puerto Rico, Team USA.
Ooh, I'm going to say U.S. comes out ahead 5-3.
Nice. Otherwise, I was going to have Bobby kick you off the show.
Yeah, about 5-3, I think they'll bounce back from the game that they, as I mentioned in the previous segment, and I think they'll use what they learned in that game to pull out ahead 5-3.
Certainly a lot of firepower on both sides. Not always the case with the team we're going to look at today. Out there in spring training, the Atlanta Braves had themselves a terrible season last year, Jeff. Dead last in the National League East, 68-93. They were about as train wrecky as a train wreck can get. But the one thing they do have to rally around is they did get better, it seemed, a little bit as the season progressed. Let's take a look at Atlanta. They have been about as busy over the past 2 years as any other franchise. They seem to have brought in a lot of guys. They brought in Dansby Swanson, got him in a trade with the Arizona Diamondbacks for Shelby Miller to really anchor their infield, be their starting shortstop. They brought in Brandon Phillips from Cincinnati, Matt Kemp, Ender Inciarte, and Nick Markakis, a brand new outfield from what they had 2 years ago.
Yeah, but I'm going to go back. Let's start with that record that you mentioned. What happened on August 2nd?
It's when they got the young Mr. Dansby Swanson, correct? That's when he came
up. And Matt Kemp, that was his first game with the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
So from August 2nd on, their record was 31-25.
Nice.
So the moves that they've been making seem to be helping, at least record-wise and appearance-wise. So, you know, I think they're looking at a sort of a short turnaround to try to be competitive. They brought in a lot of guys who can mentor some of the younger pitchers, Foltynewicz and Whistler. And so you don't know what you're going to get out of guys like Colon or R.A. Dickey, but they're there to make sure the young guys can really carry the torch and help the team succeed going forward, not just this season, but in the future.
Yeah, let's take a quick peek at that rotation. Julio Teheran, for all intents and purposes, was a really top-flight pitcher last year. I would say, you know, if you want to look at the top 20% of starters in the National League, he is certainly among them. Electric stuff, great movement, really a centerpiece that you can build around. And then, interestingly enough, they went super old with their 2 and 3 spots. They brought in Bartolo Colon, who has been pitching for I don't even know how long. It seems like he's been around for a long time. His weight is out of control. He doesn't throw hard anymore, but he still seems to get guys out. And then R.A. Dickey, the knuckleball pitcher. And then they go to St. Louis and they bring in Jaime Garcia, a guy that's got a whole lot of injury questions. So you've got fat and out of shape, you've got an old knuckleballer, and you've got an injury-prone guy at 2, 3, and 4.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting mix of players that they brought in. I mean, I like Jaime Garcia, his potential that he brings. His, you know, as mentioned, his history is really spotty. He could be really good when he's healthy or not so good, as we saw last year. And Colon, yeah, you don't know what you're going to get out of him. He is going to be 44 in May. And R.A. Dickey's in his 40s. So I look at this rotation as a really interesting one, only because the swing is so wide, right? So they could be pretty good and pretty competitive, or they could just be really bad. The young guys could not mature, could not take a step forward, and the old guys could, you know, fall off a cliff. So, you know, they'll be really interesting to watch. But it's an interesting mix-up, you're right.
Yeah, Mike Foltynewicz threw good in spurts. Same with Matt Whistler. I would expect that the two of them probably on a pretty good learning curve what they got last year. Both of them, they're more hard throwers with a lot of movement, more like Teheran than any of the old guys. But, hey, just look on the bright side, Jeff. If one of those guys, Dickey or Garcia or Colon, goes down, they also have Josh Colmenter, another journeyman old guy that they brought in last year and actually performed pretty well, and they're taking another look at him this spring.
Well, yeah, and I think the interesting thing about the rotation and the young guys is, and as I had mentioned, they did much better as a team in the second half, going 31-25. And in the first half is when Whistler and Foltynewicz actually did better. So if those guys can take what they learned in the first half and apply it throughout the entire 2017 season, you know, that it could make that rotation competitive. And they have a lot of young guys coming up in their farm system too, who they could probably call up mid-season to help out and add a little stability there.
Yeah, they have the same problem that everybody else in the National League has, and that's a dodgy bullpen. Ian Kroll is going to be a part of that. Vizcaino, they said a Colmenter. They have Paco Rodriguez, who you saw a lot as a Dodger. Seemed like he had a pretty good future. Fought the injury bug. Is Paco back?
I hope so. I really like Paco Rodriguez. I was disappointed when he got injured. I really thought he had a long future with the Dodgers. He was one of those guys, and mind you, the Dodgers haven't had a lot of these relievers over the past several seasons, but he was the one guy who felt really good when he came in. I really liked his delivery, and I hope he's over his injury bug, because he's someone who could really add a lot to that bullpen, along with, you know, veteran Jim Johnson. I one guy I really like in that bullpen, and he walks a little too much for me, but if he can learn to work out those issues, is Aroldis Vizcaino. That's someone who I love his heat. I love how hard he throws, and I think that he can be a really solid piece in that bullpen.
Yeah, he just has got to learn how to throw strikes early in the count. He's an awful lot like a version of Aroldis Chapman in that sometimes Chapman comes in, and I think, you know, he's more impressed with lighting up the lamp than he is about throwing strikes. And that's the same thing I see with Vizcaino. Like, if he could just learn how to pitch instead of throw so much, I think I would be with you and being excited about him.
Yeah, it's an interesting comparison to Chapman, because we know Chapman, when he falls behind in the count, he gets rid of his, the pitches with movement, and he just really tries to shove that fastball down the pike. And, it doesn't matter how hard you throw a fastball. If a pitcher is zeroed in on it, he's going to hit it. So, that could be Vizcaino's issue. And he's got time to work it out. I think he's still learning to pitch. So I hope he gets it together. He's one of those underrated bullpen arms that I see in baseball, that someone who I really try to watch whenever he comes in.
They do have a new catcher this year. They brought in Kurt Suzuki, who is a pretty decent defensive catcher. He worked with some really good pitchers when he was in Oakland. You know, he had Sonny Gray. He had some of those guys. He's going to be learning and trying to figure out how to call a good game with these guys. But not much offense. And for a team that may have a little bit of issue scoring runs, the catcher is one of those positions they're going to get almost no offense from. Kurt Suzuki, Tyler Flowers, Anthony Recker all in camp.
Yeah, actually, I like Flowers probably a little more than you do, I guess. If you look at what he did in 83 games for the Braves last year, there's a statistic I like. It's a run creation adjusted statistic. It's usually noted as RC+. And that's the percentage above or below that player really creates runs with his entire gameplay across the board, not just with the bat, but base running and so forth. And he was at 110, which means he's 10% better than your kind of average player at that position. So I do think he brings a little bit with the bat. I mean, he hit 270 for them last year, so it's not a hole in the lineup. I feel probably better about him than Adonis Garcia, who's, their third baseman.
Yeah, third base, another issue, Adonis Garcia and Rio Ruiz. Rio, he was over with Houston. He's sort of been on their top 10, top 12 prospect list for a while. It sort of feels like now is the time that he's either going to make it or they got to throw him back and he's going to be a 4A player his whole life.
Yeah, he's already 31, and he's come over from Cuba, so you're right. This is the time for him to figure it out, and they need to see what they got. And if he's not working out, they do have a lot of players in the farm system that they can move and try to pick up a third baseman at the trade deadline if it seems like they're competitive and they're able to get close to a wild card or stay in contention there. So I think a lot will depend on Garcia's first half and see how he does. It'd be one thing if Garcia was maybe good with the bat but not good with the glove, or good with the glove and not so great with the bat, but he hasn't really shown that he's good on either side of the ball.
Yeah, he's like Andy Marte or Hector Luna for some reason, right, in my head. Like he just seems like he's not going to take that step. At least with somebody like a Miguel Sano up in Minnesota, like you can hear it off of his bat. And there are those times that he strikes out and he has bad approaches at the plate, and there are sometimes that he's got stone hands in the field, but you see the great play and you see the 430-foot home run and you see the line drive into the gap, and I don't know that you get that with Adonis Garcia.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people will point to his .273 batting average, which is respectable, but then his on base was only .311, so he's striking out a lot. If he makes contact, he can probably get a hit, but you know, these days, when, you know, what players are expected to do, just having a high average isn't enough. You really need to be able to get on base.
Really thin for the Braves in the outfield. Matt Kemp, Ender Inciarte, Nick Markakis. They're looking for a fourth and a fifth outfielder. They do have Emilio Bonifacio in camp. They got a guy like Matt Tuiasosopo, who has always just been sort of potential unrealized. There's a couple of guys, though, playing for Puerto Rico tonight without contracts, and I want to know what your thoughts are about these guys maybe joining the Braves, and that's Angel Pagan and Mike Aviles.
I mean, Pagan, when he's healthy, he's a contributor, but do the Braves want to bring in a guy with injury concerns? Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, that's sort of an issue that you're always worried about that with Matt Kemp, for example. I'd rather go for someone who's a little bit more solid option, a little more dependable. If I was the Braves, I probably would pass on those two players. Mike Aviles doesn't really do much for me.
What I like about Aviles is, though, that he's cheap. And he can play second, short, third, left, and right. And in a National League lineup, I mean, he's a guy that you can put on the bench for 4 or 5 days, and he's not going to lose his swing, can come in, can give somebody a day off, and he can also pinch hit. And he's cheap.
Right. But, I mean, they already have Emilio Bonifacio on the roster, and I think he's someone who has more upside than Mike Aviles. And does a little bit of what Mike Aviles does, but in certain aspects, speed and so forth, he's got a little bit more to offer. So I'm not sure they need to replicate that kind of player. I'd rather just see what I have out of Emilio Bonifacio and then maybe give someone like Chase d'Arnaud an opportunity.
But Mike Aviles has a beautiful head of blonde hair now.
That is... Blonde is in, and you look at Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that's right. The whole team dying blonde, so we will look forward to that. Hey, Jeff, you got a couple minutes? Want to stick around and answer some Q&A questions?
Let's do it.
All right, this is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game. It's time for a Q&A. Remember, if you would like to send us a question, just email us to submissions@joefanshow.com or tweet us at Joe Fan Show. And Jeff Klein, of course, joining me from Los Angeles, Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas. In all that time that we were talking about the Braves, we never mentioned that they're moving into their brand new stadium this year, because what have we learned about professional sports? When your stadium is 20 years old, it's time to blow it up. Start all over again.
Yeah, that doesn't register with me at all. I love Dodger Stadium, so keep it there forever.
Yeah, I, and of course, we're not blowing up Dodger Stadium. That was Turner Field getting blown up there in Atlanta. Brand new ball yard. You know what, Jeff? I think the ancient Greeks would just laugh at us for getting rid of a 20-year-old stadium. I mean, that thing was built for the 1996 Olympics. It was in great condition. I don't understand what the thought process was, other than they think that the new stadium is more convenient.
Yeah, it's like a shiny bauble. I think that teams feel like they need a new shiny kind of trophy to show off or something like that.
Yeah,
to attract fans.
I think the thing that Atlanta needs to realize is Atlanta is very much like Los Angeles, and nothing is convenient because it's got really terrible traffic and everything's really far apart. So it's going to be convenient for some people and not for others. So good luck down there in Atlanta. I hope the new ball yard serves you well for at least 15 more seasons. Q&A time. We got a question here from Thomas in Boulder City, who asks, should the New York Giants still be considering Adrian Peterson? Hashtag all day in NYC.
I mean, he had a great year in 2015, over 1,400 yards, and then he had a freak injury that knocked him out for all of last year. But he's now going to be, 32?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I got 32-year-old coming off an injury like that. I think you just pass on him.
Yeah, I think they should pass, too, even though Paul Perkins is serviceable. They did sign Sean Drone yesterday, and I don't think he's the answer to any question. But, I don't know. I think if you can get him at a reasonable price, I would. But I don't think he was going to come with a reasonable price. Rob in North Las Vegas asks, what did you think of Jordan Spieth's comments about looking forward to the Masters being over? Hashtag playing scared.
This is one of those comments I feel gets blown up in social media where it wasn't really a big deal. He gets so much there's so much attention on this, on the Masters and for Spieth, and I think it's just all overwhelming for him. I mean, he's still, he even said he's still getting questions going back to, you know, several years about previous Masters he's been in. So I just think that's, it's too much talk about that. I understand the guy, you know, he doesn't want to keep dealing with those same questions over and over. He just wants to just pass this tournament. And so not a big deal to me.
Yeah, not a big deal to me, too. I thought it was a logical and reasonable response. But, Jeff, what do we know about the media and consumers of media? Logic and reasoning is not our strong suit. So I think they just went after him when they didn't need to. Cody in Las Vegas asks, who is the best athlete right now that nobody is talking about? Hashtag publicity time.
So there's a number of athletes, because we know that the, you know, speaking of the media, they're limited on who they're going to cover for a lot of different reasons. But I'm going to go with Lindsey Vonn.
Okay.
And I mean, she's pretty amazing. She's got 77 World Cup wins. She's been on the podium 130 times. She's the greatest female alpine skier ever. And I think that she has a very interesting story because, she, you know, as you know, she had a really serious injury.
Mm-hmm.
She had some nerve damage. She's rehabbing to come back from that. And I think it's worth following to see what she's going to do in 2018 in Pyeongchang.
Yeah, she's certainly got a lot to prove as it comes up. I got another Olympic athlete, and that is Kyle Snyder from The Ohio State University. He just won his second national championship. This guy can flat get it done. If you don't know him, check out Kyle Snyder. You've been listening to Clayton Hamilton. This is the Joe Fan Show for Jeff Klein and Mo Nerali. Enjoy the games. TC Martin, the doctor, is next.